Warzone Confessions. Raw truth from the front.
Those reports can list objectives and body counts, but they miss what actually unfolds when regular people are shoved into impossible choices. When we talk about war zone confessions, I'm thinking about the stories vets trusted us with, the ones that never make a briefing slide or the news. I want to walk through one of those with you because it shows the human reality under the uniform.
I'm in. As a storyteller, I used to think the arc closed when the plane landed. Lately, I've realized the hardest chapter often starts right there on the tarmac. And the co-authors of that chapter, the people who steady the landing, barely get noticed.
Yeah, this one hits close. I've watched good teammates come home and feel unmoored, like the mission ended and nobody told them what replaces it. And then I've watched people outside any chain of command build a new kind of squad around them. Not official, but absolutely life-saving.
Lifeline is the word. And what I've seen work isn't random kindness. It's when the help becomes structured. Not just louder advocacy, an actual movement that can hold ground.
That difference matters. Advocacy is someone speaking for you when you can't. Organizing is, hang on, the image I want is an engine you can start every time, not just a jumpstart that dies 10 minutes later.
Exactly. People mix up mobilizing with organizing. Mobilizing can fill a room once. Then everyone goes home and the scaffolding vanishes. Organizing leaves the scaffolding in place. It builds something with staying power.
I watched a group of vets bounce off a local housing authority like that. One advocate calling, voicemail purgatory. So they pivoted. They ditched the single spokesperson model and went old school face-to-face. Think church basement one-ons. The kind of thing Saul Alinsky taught in Chicago back in the 40s, even if they'd never heard his name.
They reinvented the industrial area's foundation method without the label. Of course they did.
Weeks of one-to-ones. Trust first. Stories traded, not just complaints logged. They showed up at a city council session as a unit, 30 vets, each taking a slice of the same neglect timeline. The air in that chamber changed.
Because perceived power is power. The council didn't just see 30 speakers. They saw a potential voting bloc that could self-coordinate. A headache they'd rather schedule than ignore.
Right. No chance. No signs. Just leverage. Suddenly the director's calendar was wide open. Not a protest action. A power move.
I'll die on this hill. Marches are tools. The objective is to be recognized as a negotiating counterpart who gets the meeting without marching. That takes reputation, and reputation takes grind, way more than making a poster.
And the grind is relational, not transactional. Organizers talk about intermediate institutions. It sounds like a footnote. It is not a footnote.
Preach. The engine is the places people already belong. Faith groups, schools, unions. Those institutions sit between the person and the state. Strengthen them, and you get ballast.
Which is a mind-bender for anyone trained to live inside one institution where the only authority that counts is the chain of command. You don't form outside alliances to pressure it. You are it.
So, the shift is jarring. From instrument of the state to someone who has to organize civil society to push that same state. No wonder it feels emotionally treacherous.
It can feel like disloyalty. You're taught the system's got your back. When it doesn't, the reflex is to fix it internally, not to build parallel power. That reflex breeds powerlessness.
Because you're keeping rules that don't protect you anymore. Groups like Citizens UK talk about what happens when the state and the market bulk up and civil society withers. You end up with life reduced to what? Casting a ballot and swiping a card.
And maybe logging volunteer hours. Still atomized. Not power. Not yet.
That's why those living wage campaigns impressed me. They didn't say be generous. They produced a calculated hourly figure tied to actual costs. It turned the debate from what's the cheapest rate to what meets a standard of dignity. Moral floor set in numbers.
So, You're not pleading from the low ground. You're naming the floor and making everyone stand on it.
Exactly. And when they got the London Olympics to designate a living wage zone, that was the judo move, using market muscle to lock in civil society's values.
Accountability with teeth. But there's a friction point for the warrior mindset. Direct action, clear end state. This basement stuff can feel soft.
I used to joke about that, and okay, I'm not really joking. It's a different alloy of steel. Sitting down one-to-one, finding common interest between a church choir and unemployed vets, that's discipline. It just doesn't look like a stack of op orders.
It's political discipline, not combat discipline.
Democratic discipline. Influence that goes both ways. The aim isn't to wipe out the other side. It's to be recognized and to force terms to be negotiated.
Recognition's tricky here. In uniform, it's medals, evals, completed missions, tangible. In a church basement, recognition is quiet, consensus. For some folks, that quiet reads like a void.
That's the psychological recalibration. The feedback loop shifts from immediate hits, mission success, to a slow pulse, meetings that don't fall apart, a coalition that keeps showing up. The win is the durable process, not the headline.
And durability matters most when the fire drill ends. If the group only exists for the crisis, it evaporates right when you need it to govern the aftermath.
Right. It becomes part of the local terrain, not a pop-up tent.
But the identity flip is the sticking point for a lot of veterans. We train to submerge the personal story under the unit's objective. Organizing starts by pulling your own story forward, one conversation at a time. That's not a tweak. It feels like rewiring.
I hear that. I don't think it's a personality transplant, though. More a retasking. Who's better at small team trust? At I've got your six. Vets already have loyalty, rhythm, mission focus. The lesson is to apply those muscles to a civilian mission set.
With no fixed chain of command and no published rules of engagement.
Maybe that becomes the mission. Write the rules. Define a fair dealing threshold, your moral floor, and make power answer to it.
Okay, tactical question. If a civilian friend says, I want to be one of the people who fights for them, where do you point them? Most aren't going to be full-time organizers.
I'd point them at the institutions already in reach. Don't limit civic life to elections or purchases. Show up where the fabric gets woven. The PTA meeting, the neighborhood association, the food pantry, the youth program. When those places get stronger, vets and organizers have something sturdy to lock into. You don't have to lead the march. You have to be part of a community worth defending.
So it's not a fight for them so much as a fight with them.
Yes. Build a home front that's organized enough to match the discipline they left downrange.
And for us, since Warzone Confessions exists to hold the whole truth of service, we keep sharing these accounts, so the courage and the cost are both visible. Not for shock, but so we remember every uniform comes with a person who still needs a trustworthy net when the missions stop.